The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Coming to you from the Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia, this is the Touchdown City Show.
Welcome into the Touchdown City Show. I'm Anthony Lewis, coming to you from the Stone Church Studio. Joining me for the podcast episode, Derek Bailey, Michael Sussman. Avon will join us for the radio broadcast this season, but we thought we would give you guys a little easy listen, something extra throughout the course of the week, and we'll drop a weekly podcast along with our radio show. So for the radio listeners, make sure you check that out. We've got shows. We're in 11 stations in 22 markets. And as soon as our new website is finished, I've got to call the webmaster today and have fix a few more things. But we'll have all the affiliates, times, and cities listed there. But gentlemen, welcome back.
Happy to be here. We're back. Football season, fast and furious.
Thrilled. Can't wait for the season to start.
We had a little preseason NFL stuff last night, and I saw preseason started last week.
They had to cut a game short last night, though. Somebody got hurt. Somebody from New England.
Yeah, I think somebody got nervous. You know, somebody got carded off, so they just canceled it.
Yeah. Gotta love preseason football.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Third stringers trying to make the team.
Hey, they give it all they got, though. I'll give that to them.
That they do. I'm ready for the real guys.
Yeah, sometimes, though, I like watching, if the Giants are playing, I like to see David Sills out there. I like to see Arizona, watch Dante, you know, and see the guys that I'm kind of following.
Some of those guys will get a roster spot because of how they perform in the preseason, so yeah, that'll be a good thing.
Yeah, high Geno expectations, too, this year. A lot of Mountaineer storylines.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Mountaineer storylines, it's year five of the Neil Brown era. First of all, I'm shocked that those words even came out of my mouth. I'm shocked that he made it to year five. But I understand the circumstances behind it. Were you guys shocked that he made it through the offseason?
After that god-awful press conference towards the end of last year, after the Ren Baker hiring, not at all. I mean, 5-7 is subpar, obviously, but it was juxtaposed in a weird way, claiming that the Big 12 conference was really strong, even though it was a majority TCU and Kansas State that excelled, and then a whole lot of average after that. So I definitely wasn't surprised, given the tone and the standard of the university, and that's where it starts right there, the university. I don't know what they're looking for.
That's how I feel. I mean, you have a 5-7 season. That's just very, very bad. And I'm not surprised that he made it through, I guess, but it is a bit surprising that, like, there isn't more hot seat talk coming out of Morgantown. That surprises me. Like, oh, well, we're going to wait and see how the season goes and da-da-da. Why doesn't somebody come out and just say, hey, he better win?
Because I think people have. And he said it. He knows.
But, I mean, it's surprising. I guess it's surprising to me because I'm never used to seeing Mountaineer football this down. Like, I'm 42 years old. I'll be 43 this year. Mountaineer football is at a low point. We've had worse seasons, but as far as season excitement, things like that, it's at a low point. No one's talking about it. No one cares. Everybody's just kind of wait. Well, who's the next coach going to be?
Yeah, it's pretty. You know, the one thing, I wasn't shocked that he made it to year five. I was shocked that he was allowed to make it to year five with his staff intact.
Well, and he's going to be back to calling plays. Like, that's part of the reason why Graham Harrell left. If Purdue comes out there and rolls this year, like with on offense, because they got Card. He's a pretty good quarterback. Y'all remember Card from Texas?
Mm-hmm.
He transferred into Purdue. He may do well at Purdue. I don't know. We'll see what they do. But if Harrell goes out there and Purdue, like, explodes and starts scoring a bunch of points and West Virginia's out here stuck in the mud scoring 20 again, I'm going to be very, very upset.
And particularly the defensive staff staying intact after last year. Jordan Leslie, I think, was the main question mark just because of how weak the scheme was at times. That's what I look for this season. Is it more aggressive in that regard?
In the offensive line, is this the year finally? Are we going to wait again? I mean, you have three preseason all Big 12 performers on that offensive line. Everybody's waiting. You have formidable running backs. You have everything you need to run the football. if the offensive line isn't good this year, it's strictly on your coaching staff. I don't care what anyone says.
You know, what was crazy was, you know, at times I thought the offensive line looked terrible last year, but honestly, they graded out like one of the highest in the Big 12, which was shocking. So they've improved, but what I'm looking for this year out of the offensive line is domination. Like, you've got three first-team all-Big 12 guys up front, and you've got a solid depth chart. I'm expecting domination up front.
Frazier's getting All-American honors. Milam is he's back. I mean, Nestor's back. That's three returning stars. I'm not sure who the other one is that's the all-conference. Was it Nestor? I know Milam and Frazier. Was it Nestor?
And Frazier.
Okay, Milam. So it's those three that are the all-conference. I mean, that's a solid offensive line foundation. You have to be able to go out there and run the football. We've said it over and over and over and over, everybody, since the beginning of time. The game is won and lost on the line of scrimmage. West Virginia has a good offensive line of scrimmage. They should be able to move the football.
That group, it imposed its will against Virginia Tech. I think it did against Baylor as well, played well against Pitt, embarrassed itself against Texas Tech in Texas. So to your point about grading out, what does that mean? Does that mean you're a dominant unit, or you can just point to the statistics and say, well, they did their job a majority of the time? I don't know. I think
when they break down the film, you know, they grade out well. But here's the thing. When the issue against Texas Tech was a scheme issue, and that boils down to Graham Harrell and Neil Brown not being prepared to pick up the blitz packages and that type of thing. So, you know, and not only that, but why are we losing to Texas Tech? This could be the fifth year in a row.
They lack consistency is the best way to say what we're talking about here. The offensive line, the whole team lacks consistency, and that, to me, is your coaching staff.
Yeah, I agree. But honestly, back to my original point, I am shocked that a lot of these guys made it back. I mean, obviously, they've got some new coaches. They brought in Blaine Stewart from the Steelers, mm-hmm. which, of course, is Bill Stewart's son. You know, I thought that was a great hire. You know, Blaine's paid his dues at Pittsburgh. Anytime you get an opportunity to hire a guy that's got professional NFL experience and real, he just wasn't carrying water bottles. He was coaching. You bring that guy in. And, of course, he loves WVU.
I'll also say, though, in order, like the coaching staff, it probably would be hard to gain replacements because you're jumping into a situation that's very, very risky.
Yeah, yeah.
So you may be like, that might be part of the reason why a lot of the staff didn't change.
Well, that, and, you know, and I know they tried to make, I know specifically of a person they tried to hire, and he basically declined the job because he said, I'm not going for 1 year. And then, but this was 2 years ago. Oh. So he thought last year would have been the year that they got canned. So he's like, I'm not giving up my current position, which I'm solid in, and making a move to Morgantown just for a year. Well, I think they're going to get fired. But, yeah, we shall see. Another thing that came out that I thought was interesting was the Big 12 standings. And West Virginia was predicted to be 13th out of 14 teams.
Now, see, this goes back to me being 43 this fall.
You're getting old, Derek.
I'm past old. I was old at 20. With teams like BYU, Cincinnati has a new coach, and mind you, that coach was being run out of Louisville. Satterfield was not going to make it at Louisville, and he took the Cincinnati job. BYU, Cincinnati, Central Florida, and Houston. You're 13th out of 14 behind two of those teams at a minimum. That's terrible. If they don't finish 10th or better, I'll be surprised. I do not expect much out of the Big 12. I think it's very... I don't even want to call it top heavy. I think it's wide open. I don't know who's going to win it. It's wide open, though. But there are some bad teams, in my opinion, in the Big 12, and West Virginia is better than 13th.
I was shocked that they were rated that low. And here's my take on it. I don't think it's a talent. I don't think the people think the talent is that poor at West Virginia. I think the voters don't have faith in the coaching staff.
I mean, and why would they?
That hit the nail on the head right there.
I mean, you cannot look at this team on paper. When you're putting guys, when you've got an offensive line, your offense alone should be enough to win you seven or eight games.
I know you base a lot of this preseason stuff off of last year and everything, but if you have three all-conference performers, Cincinnati, Central Florida, BYU, and Houston are all four on the schedule. They haven't seen anything like that week in, week out. They're going to see it week in, week out for the first time ever this year. they're going to struggle with that. You should be able to beat those teams.
One thing that might have swayed the media voters is the defensive line losing Dante Stills, and then Jordan Jefferson hits the transfer portal and goes to LSU. You lose Taj Alston also. So that's can you rush the passer this season? I think that's a big question. And then your average at receiver a year ago, and you lose almost 100% of that production. So to your point about on paper, I think they might be looking at a lot of the paper in just the statistics offensively. I don't know.
It's hard to tell. I mean, but I just can't see 13th. I can't. If they finish 13th, that's way worse than they were last year, which is hard to top.
Yeah.
I think it's an exaggeration. Yeah. 13th or 14th, that's like bags over the head at the game, yes. Shut down the program bag.
You're talking 2-10. That's what that's like.
Well, and also, too, you don't have a returning starter quarterback. So there's where your issue is. I don't remember a year. The last time I felt this uncertain about a team was probably 2005 after Rashid left.
They went 11-1.
Well, yeah. Well, surprise. I don't think this kid from Daphne, Alabama.
I don't think this one's going 11-1.
Yeah, but this is the first time I felt this uncertain, like not knowing.
Right.
You know, because with that team, you know, you lose Rashid Marshall, Chris Henry, you lose all these guys, KJ Harris, all these guys go to the NFL, and then you're just like, who is going to play for us? And then all of a sudden,
some guy named Pat and some guy named Steve and some guy they called Pac-Man.
Yeah. Pac-Man
was gone.
He left too. He's gone. So, yeah. So, really, all they were stuck with was, Dan Moses and then the defense. The defense kept it together for him earlier that season. But, let's talk about the quarterbacks. I mean, obviously, that is a question mark, and that's probably why this team is ranked so low. You got Nico and you've got Garrett Green. You've got two guys that are lacking experience, but played some last year and showed some flashes, but they definitely showed their youth on the field.
Yeah, Garrett Green, 55% as a passer last year. His strength is obviously with his legs. Do you go for an option scheme with C.J. Donaldson, or do you give the keys to the Ferrari to Nico Markiol and incorporate more play action and try to transform this thing? I've been outspoken since the start. Give it to Markiol. We need that leader. What do you think?
I'm in agreement because unless there is something that they're seeing in practice that Garrett Green has improved leaps and bounds as a passer, I think West Virginia is going to be able to run the football anyway. I don't think they need a runner at quarterback. I think Marikiol will be just fine. He's highly thought of. He was highly recruited. He looked calm back there last year. Give him a shot. What do you have to lose? Even if you go 4-8, what do you have to lose with him? You know what you're going to get out of Green if he hasn't improved. Now, if he's improved as a passer, I'm completely fine. But we'll see that in the first game.
Yeah, you're going to find out in Happy Valley. My opinion on it is, I just want somebody that's not going to turn the ball over. And I don't mind the inexperience of Markiel, but, man, they bring two different things. It's really a tough decision. Because then you can say, all right, well, we're not going to throw the ball 40 times. We're going to run this RPO stuff into the ground, and I'm going to use C.J. Donaldson and Justin Johnson and these guys and run the ball down your throat. And then when I need to pass, I'm going to pass. Or you can try to run your stuff, and I'm using my air quotes, and then stand back there and throw the ball over the field with Markiel. It'll be an interesting call. It's a good problem to have when you have two quarterbacks and you've got to make a decision moving forward. But I definitely think you're going to see both of these guys. No matter what, man.
The dreaded two-quarterback system. Don't make any decisions.
If you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one.
Except for in 1993, West Virginia had two quarterbacks, and it worked out just fine. Speaking of 1993, on the radio broadcast, we're going to be doing a weekly segment with a member of that team. So when those are archived here on the podcast platforms, check those out. This week's episode will feature Mike Collins. Of course, he was from Huntington, West Virginia, team captain of the 93 team, and of course, helped lead that team to an undefeated regular season. So I will put you if on the radio broadcast, you'll hear about 12 or 13 minutes of it, but we will then drop the full. I talked to Mike for like an hour.
Those guys are going to have some stories.
Yeah, they've got stories.
Can you imagine 30 years ago now? God.
I know. I feel really old.
That was cool. I didn't know anything about Rich Rod as a player either. That was cool.
Yeah, so
he was a walk-on safety.
Yeah, so if you're listening, if you need something to go back and listen to this summer, we did the summer series leading up for Penn State. We did, was it 5 episodes? We had Rich Rodriguez. We had Major Harris, Kevin Koken, Adrian Morrell, and Pat Randolph. And they were all talking about their experiences against Penn State. So there's 5 episodes you can check out. And, of course, we've got a lot of new content coming up, including this podcast version. And I'm excited to kind of get started with the radio stuff as well. Again, real excited about that, just the fact of the growth. And then, you know, 22 radio markets is, you know, pretty good for a bunch of bums, you know? Hey, I want to tell you guys, just a another reminder, in the radio broadcast, this year our partner, Alumni Hall, we're going to be doing the Alumni Hall Trivia Question of the Week, so make sure you listen for that, and then we'll be giving out $25 gift cards every week for the winner of the Alumni Hall Trivia Question. Well, let me ask you guys this. What do you see as the strengths of this team? We've already hit on some of it, but what are the strengths of this football team?
I got two. CJ. He's the centerpiece. He was sensational and a player that I don't want to say that the staff lucked out with, but they brought him in to be an H-body tight end kind of guy. And as a true freshman last season, you found out how explosive he could be as a physical runner. And we got him in the press room a couple times. C.J. Donaldson is a massive human being. He's a load to bring down. He talked about in his preseason presser about how people have to make business decisions when they tackle him. And he's just an undeniable, unstoppable force.
Yeah, do I want to break my collarbone or do I want to tackle this guy?
Those 180-pound corners aren't getting in his way. Let's be real. If he breaks that line of scrimmage, those dudes are going to dive at his feet and just hope they get a shoelace. They're not going to tackle him. But, yeah, I agree with Michael. It's going to be the offensive line and the running backs. Not just Donaldson that's good. They have 3 back there that are viable players. I mean, they got, you know, there's more than Donaldson back there. But that's the strength of the team, and that's a good strength to have because Michael was concerned about the suspect defense. You can run the ball, control the clock. That's what you have to do if you got a bad defense. Just run the ball and control the clock. So the offensive line and the running backs are the strength of the team, in my opinion. And I know the offensive line's been inconsistent. We're waiting on that consistency. If they can give that to you for 12 games, you're gonna have some success. You're gonna win some games.
I agree. I think the strength of this team is obviously the offensive line and the running backs. CJ Donaldson, that picture of Avon standing beside that I sent to you guys where Avon, they're posing together. Man. Obviously Avon is one of the greatest running backs in college football history, right? 5,200 yards rushing all time. And then he's standing beside this massive.
He looks like he's half a C.J. Donaldson.
Yeah.
He's like half of him.
Yeah. He's a big old boy. And then you got Jalen Anderson, who I saw a great – listen, Jalen Anderson, if it wasn't for C.J. Donaldson, he would be starting.
Yes.
And he's going to get a lot of carries this year. I think they're just going to rotate these guys in and try to kill you with them.
Mathis transferred out because it's so deep. Mathis was solid. He wasn't horrible. I mean, he wasn't great. He wasn't horrible. But he transfers out because the backfield's so deep.
Well, then you have Justin Johnson and Jaheim White.
There's 4.
Yeah. They say Jaheim White is a burner, just a blazer. Speed. So you've got 4 guys up there who you can't – there's no excuse for not being able to run the football. And if you run the football, what happens?
It opens up the passing game.
Yeah, it's not rocket science. I mean –
the teams that run the ball best win the games, generally. It's that way. I don't know. I mean, in all of football, it doesn't matter what level.
Hey, I want to remind you guys, this Saturday on Main Street in St. Albans, West Virginia, it's Mountaineers on Main Street. We're going to be down there. We're going to have a booth down there, so come down and see us. And, of course, the legendary runaway beer truck, Owen Schmidt, will be there, along with our very own Avon Coburn and the GOAT, the all-time GOAT, the man, the myth, the legend, Major Harris, will be back in the house. So I'm really excited about that.
Think about that backfield.
Yeah.
If you had Avon,
Major Harris, Schmidt,
and Owen Schmidt.
Yeah. You're not going to lose many games
No.
with that lineup.
But Major, honestly, Major's, what, 10, 12 years before his time, really? I mean, Michael Vick rolled in about 98, 99. Major was about 88. You get a Major in now, like you get a Major in today's football.
First pick.
Good Lord almighty.
He's the first pick of the draft.
He's going off.
You know, and speaking of, you know, before I interviewed him for the Penn State stuff, I went back and watched the 88 Penn State game.
They had it on Channel 13 recently.
Oh my God. He, you know, people think of him as a scrambler, and clearly he was. The run, the play,
the,
you know,
ball he threw up the left sideline. I can't remember who
Calvin
it was.
Calvin Phillips.
Man, it was perfect.
70 yards on a rope.
Just perfect.
So before we continue, just another funny Major Harris story. So God, it's probably been 10 years or longer now. He was in town for Mark Plants. Mark Plants had a football camp. He brought in Coach Nealon, Zaraway, Grant Wiley, Anthony Becht. He used to bring all these guys in for these football camps. And Mage was there one day. It was at what's the field in South Charleston?
Oaksfield.
We're at Oaksfield, and Mage is gimping around. He's got a bad back. And some little boy walks up to him and goes, "Mage, my dad wants to see how far you can throw it." Now, mind you, he's barely been able to move around.
Oh, I'm sure.
Right? And he rears back and throws it 55 yards in the air. With a bad back. Imagine when he's healthy.
And the thing is, man, he threw a ball, too, in that game to Reggie Rimbert, down in the middle of the field.
So what they were doing to Penn State's defense was they were...
Whatever they wanted is what they were doing.
They were running option, and... Basically, then they were just killing them with the option game. So what happens when Mage runs left, Mage runs right, and they're pitching it? You know, what happens to the defensive backs?
They're coming up.
So they were too deep. They were too deep, and they ran an option freeze. So they showed option, and then he just drops back. Reggie Rembert's like 10 yards behind the safeties.
Wide open.
Touchdown, 70 yards.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
The only fault I have with that game is that's when Don Nealon was too classy. He should have beat them 90-8. It was 41-8 at halftime. He should have beat them as bad as he could have, because they used to do that to West Virginia all the time.
Well, we know that Coach Nealon is a class act, but they handed him a good L that day.
Oh, they did.
All right, let's talk a little conference realignment. And it's been a crazy offseason with this stuff. The Big 12, obviously, adding UFC or UCF, whatever the hell they want to be called, Central Florida in my book, Houston, BYU, and Cincinnati. Four new teams in the Big 12 this year. Now they've gone out and added, for next year, Colorado, Arizona, and Arizona State.
And Utah.
So they've added four more teams. So we've got eight new teams next year, new to us, that'll be in the conference. I'm going to be curious, one, how do you think they should divide up this conference? Should we have an East-West division, or do you put them in four pods, and then you play the four, then you rotate around the other four? How would you see this thing mapped out? And do you think this growth of the Big 12 is been a good move for the conference?
Good move for the conference, because it's hunt or be hunted at this point, and you beat the Pac-12 essentially by absorbing the schools rather than the same thing happening vice versa and more of your members leaving after Oklahoma and Texas. To answer your question, I think you have to divide it into an East and a West, or a North and a South. However you have to do it, because it's just too many teams for it to just be a straightforward league.
Yeah, it's got to be divided. The pod system might work, because you have West Virginia, Cincinnati, and Central Florida in the East, kind of. I don't know who else you could put with them, though. That's the problem with maybe an East, like an Eastern pod.
Maybe Iowa State.
I mean, that's kind of not fair to Iowa State, in my opinion, because they're going to be traveling all the way. You know,
I don't hear it.
Well, I know West Virginia, too. But, I mean, imagine if West Virginia had to go to Arizona, and then 2 weeks later to Utah, and then 2 weeks later to Arizona State. That would just be absurd. That's crazy. You can't have that going on. So they're going to have to come up with some way to do this scheduling and make it fair and balanced. It's a good move overall, because like Michael said, if you don't do that, you're probably going down, because somebody's getting poached from the Big 12 to go to the Pac-12 or the Big 10 or the wherever they're going now. I'm not a big fan of where this is headed. I don't think it's done. I think before long we're going to see college football like in several different levels. There's going to be the upper level, which is going to be like the big money schools, the blue blood schools and teams like that. And then I think there's going to be like a second level, which is where probably West Virginia will fit in, like in the tier two with like, it'll be say like West Virginia, you know, Iowa State, Kansas State, teams that don't have the kind of money to spend that these other teams do. But the it's overall, it's just not going in the right direction, in my opinion. You're expanding the playoff. People are upset that the players are getting paid, but then at the same time, if you win a national championship, you might have to play a 17-game schedule. So why wouldn't you pay the players? I mean, you're asking more of the players. Mm-hmm. It's just it's all going wrong, in my opinion, but that's not for this time. So, but the moves were good. They had to do what they had to do, and I'm still anxious to see what happens to Clemson and Florida State because I know they're not very happy.
Yeah, so they're trying to basically say, hey, we want more money than everybody else, or we're going to take a walk. Which doesn't bother me because whatever happens to the ACC, I feel like is deserved. Well,
I'm going to say this over and over and over and over. Nothing would satisfy me more than to see Notre Dame left out. Nothing would satisfy me more to see them left out because, in my opinion, that's what a lot of the Big Ten's sticking it to Notre Dame. They've added USC. They were talking about adding Stanford. All those schools in the Big Ten now, like Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, Stanford, or excuse me, USC, Northwestern. All those schools have a history with Notre Dame. Well, the conference is so big now, Notre Dame's not going to be able to schedule them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of sticking at the Notre Dame, and that's what, in my opinion, this is all about. Some of it's about.
I'm okay with that. And I also, you know, I'm okay with the moves. I think they've added some. I want to see them come east, which I think we're going to see next year.
That's where Clemson and Florida State come into play, because if they get poached by, say, the Big Ten or the SEC – and then North Carolina's been rumored to be in wanting out of there, too. You got Pitt, Virginia, Virginia Tech. You know, those teams are going to need a home. Where are they going to go?
So let's say you add four teams from the ACC. Who do you take? I'll give you my four.
Well, I mean, if Clemson and Florida State are available, that's a no-brainer.
Subtract them.
Subtract those two.
Yeah.
My four would be Louisville, Virginia, Virginia Tech, and Pitt. Although I would love to see Pitt left out too.
Louisville, strong one, because you get consistency in all of the sports there, right. And they have a strong fan base. I could live without Virginia Tech. We don't need the Hokies.
Where are they going as a program? By the way, I don't. They may be finished. That was the worst team I've ever seen them have last year. They were terrible.
I think Pitt's a good addition, partially because it's a strong market. But I don't know how pertinent the market value is as far as arguing it's in a big area. Let's take this team. I think that's how conference leaders are looking at this. They're trying to control college sports like they're professional sports when the tradition is really more based in rivalries. I think sooner or later the big picture value of the college football product is just going to deteriorate because it's so scrambled. It's all over the place. I mean, you're a California school flying to play Rutgers. How long are the fans going to care about that?
Well, I'll tell you how long USC fans are going to care, because I keep bringing this up and over and over and over. There's going to be a time that they're 10-0. They're pushing for a national title. They got to come across the country to go to Madison, Wisconsin in the middle of November at 8 o'clock at night, and it's 17 degrees and it's snow flurrying, and they're going to get destroyed. That's when the fans will say, this is no fun anymore.
Do you think it'll move towards an AFC-NFC kind of construct? Because you brought up a tier system. I think it's a gradual shift towards a worse semi-pro. Well,
that's what they're breaking away. They're trying to break away from the NCAA. Let's go ahead and they're trying to break away from the NCAA. That's another part of this this whole shift, in my opinion. When I say the tiers, like I'm talking about the elite college football teams, like. You're going to have Southern Cal, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Florida State, Miami, Michigan, Ohio State. Those teams are going to be at the top, and there's going to be, say, 30 of them because they put more money into it than anybody.
And you're not talking about wins and losses. You're talking about money.
I'm talking about money. I'm not talking wins and losses. Yeah, because I put Texas up there, too, and Texas, we all know, right. Texas is back every year. But, like, I put them up there, Oklahoma. You know, the teams that put a ton of money into their program, that's where I'm talking about is going to be the tier one. And then the teams – like that don't have that kind of money, they'll be in that second tier, which is where West Virginia falls, which is fine, but it'll be their own type of football. It'll be like their own level. Like you have the FBS, the FCS, it'll be like, say, Division I, Division One of the FBS and then Division Two of the FBS, and they'll play their own games, own bowls, or whatever, own playoff system, and all that stuff.
I think that's far away.
I'm not sure how far away it is because we got guys making – we got a kid at Tennessee.
You're not going to tell West Virginia, Kansas State, Washington –
I think Washington will be in Tier 1.
You're not going to – they don't spend more money than West Virginia.
They'll spend a ton. They've got a ton.
But you're not. You can't tell West Virginia they can't play for a national championship because they've played for two in the
past. I'm not telling them that.
I'm just telling you it'll never happen. I don't think those type of tiers where you can't get into a national championship will ever
But no, that's what I'm saying. They'll still be a national championship. It'll just be the West Virginia, Iowa State, whatever. It'll be
that
level.
You have two national champions?
You'll have the national. It's like a Division II. Like you have Division I, you have FBS, FCS, Division II, NAI, Division III. I can see that completely because –
You're trying to tell Kansas State that they shouldn't have possibly – or TCU, they're a Tier 2 team?
I am.
But they played in the national championship last year.
And how bad did they get beat?
It doesn't matter. They got there.
Well, we got a 12-team playoff coming. And what's the 12-team playoff for? Who is that set for?
Oh, it's set for the SEC.
And who are those SEC teams that it's set for?
Yeah. Well,
you see, that's where I'm going with it.
But I don't think you're ever going to get tiered out to where you can't win a Division I national championship.
But see, okay, here's where I'm going with this. Right now, and I'm going to use the SEC. They have 16 teams with Oklahoma and Texas joining. They're going to do pods, is what I'm told. Four pods of four teams in Georgia's pod. I'm just going to use Georgia because Georgia's the premier program right now in the country, in my opinion. Georgia's going to have Florida, Kentucky, and let's say Vanderbilt in their pod. Okay, they're going to roll those three teams year in, year out. All right, then you're going to go over and they're going to play the second pod, which is going to have Mississippi State, Texas A&M, and Missouri. They're going to roll those teams. So they're 7-0 in conference. They're all going to play no one out of conference, and then they're all going to be sitting there at 10-2. Who's coming? Who are they going to take? 10-2 Oklahoma or 10-2 West Virginia? 10-2 Texas or 10-2 UCLA? 10-2 Alabama or 10-2 Iowa? They're going to take every single blue-blooded school that they can take, and that's where I think this is going, and that's why this playoff continues to expand, because they're going to make as much money as they can.
Well, eventually it has to stop. Eventually.
That's on the university presidents. I think, because if you look at the Pac-12 situation, everybody's piling on the Kliavkov guy, but in each individual situation, he had trouble getting to a number that satisfied the presidents before he took it to ESPN. They wanted $50 million. He had a deal ready that was worth $30 million. So at what point in time does a university president just say, no, we're going to stay in our league, we're going to keep the tradition, mm-hmm. and ignore the dollar sign? Probably never.
It's never going to be able to happen because there's too much money involved.
Well, the money will fall off eventually because now with the streaming, it's not about markets anymore. However many years ago they added Rutgers, they got the New York market, and I think they got a buck and a quarter for every household in that area because of it. But now it's going to streaming, and they know how many people click on and watch West Virginia versus Kansas in basketball.
Right, that's where does the market thing matter in college sports. It's not pro sports. That's not really where the hype is generated.
Yeah,
I got this right now. I'll say this right now about the Big Ten and the SEC with what they've done. There's a 12-team playoff. Let's say Notre Dame takes a spot, that's 11. The Big 12 champion takes a spot, that's 10. The rest of the 10 are coming from those two conferences.
Well, no, that's not the way that's set up. It's going to be now, that might be why they're trying to eliminate all the major conferences.
It's not set up that way now.
As of now, the conference champions, including there'll be six conference champions plus six.
Right.
But next year it goes away if the Pac-12 and the ACC folds.
And I'm telling you, because
that's why the Pac-12 needs to hang on, because why dissolve your conference? You just got rid of USC. Why does Oregon leave? You stay in the Pac-12 because you can walk into the playoffs.
What he just said is why Oregon left. Well, we can get $30 million here, but we can get $50 million over here.
But it doesn't. But here's the thing: eventually, you still want to. You want a move to the championship.
But I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. The fans
playoff,
are going to want that.
The playoff appearance makes up for that $20 million.
But they don't care. They're getting that $20 million.
The playoff appearance.
And guess who?
So wait, you'd rather make $50 million and go 5 and freaking 7. And
I'm not talking about the fans.
Or go 10-11-1.
I'm not talking about
the fans. I'm talking about the school.
They would rather make 50 million. You're getting guaranteed $50 million.
It's not football fans making these decisions.
It's not football, yes.
But the school's got to be smart enough to make these decisions as well.
Ask Mountaineer fans. What are the two most – you pick 10 games on the schedule. You got a 10-game schedule. Who are the two that the Mountaineer fans want to win the most?
It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you have an opportunity, like the old Big East, when those teams left the Big East, basically West Virginia could cakewalk into the BCS.
What we're saying is it's not the fans because, like, as a Mountaineer fan, the two games on the schedule I wanted to win more than any of them, Pitt and Penn State. I don't care about those conference games. Nebraska's coach, Matt Rule, was in the Big Ten media days, and they asked him, they said, "Coach, who do your fans want you to beat the most?" It wasn't, "Oh, I want them to beat Michigan. I want them to beat Ohio State. I want them to beat Penn State." It was, "Oh, you better beat Colorado." They're not even in the same conference. That's how much these games mean to the fans now.
I'm just saying, if you're Oregon, you are crazy to leave.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing at all. I'm just telling you they're guaranteed money is what they're looking at. They're not guaranteed money
if you stay because you're going to walk into the playoffs, and the value of that is $30 to $40 million.
but it's still 50. And hang on, though. The Big
T-shirts,
Ten,
hats, you're making Ten, more money.
The Big Ten's rights are also up first before the SEC and the ACC, so they're going to negotiate a new contract. And with all those teams in it, how much is that worth?
You're crazy because you've taken yourself out of any relevance.
Well,
you're like West Virginia, where if we would have been able to hold on to the Big East and have a seat at the table and you could win that thing, now you are middle to lower end of the pack, but you're making all this money. So are you having more fun cashing checks or getting your ass kicked every weekend?
Well, let's go ask Gordon Gee and Ren Baker. It's not fun. As a fan, it's not fun. I know that. We know that. We're saying it's not the fans' decisions, though. Like, if you're a fan of the teams, you don't – like Oregon, they're going to be playing Northwestern. Do you think their fans are going to give a crap about that game? Nobody cares.
Well, back to my original question, and then I'm going to peel out of here, and we'll cut this podcast short. We've got plenty to argue about all season long. If I was going to take teams from the ACC, I would take NC State.
That's a good one.
Virginia Tech, Pitt, and probably UNC.
I don't think North Carolina will be available.
I don't think they will either, but if they were there.
If they're there, I don't know, because they kind of kept us out for academics, and then yeah, they the hell with UNC. Fake classes.
Let's just go with three. I would definitely snap up NC State. No, I'm sorry, Louisville, NC State, Pitt, and Virginia Tech.
Yeah, but I don't think North Carolina would be available.
All right. Well, thank you. Hey, listen, we've got plenty to argue about the rest of the season, and that's why we're dropping these podcasts in the middle of the week. But I want to remind you guys to don't forget to check out the radio broadcast. And also the midweek drop with the complete Mike Collins interview from the 93 team. So for the guys, I'm Anthony Lewis, and thank you to our sponsors, Parmar and the Masters Law Firm, for being a part of the Touchdown City Show. I'm Anthony Lewis, and don't forget, for all information and all access to platforms, head over to touchdowncity.com. We'll see you soon.
Encarna Digital Marketing is a proud sponsor of the Touchdown City Show. For websites and your digital marketing needs, visit digitalmarketingwv.com.